arena, Atman rule the arena.
Welcome, I'm David Rodigan, and tonight, One Extra is bringing you a story of reggae royalty. In the first of four special tributes to some of our most enduring and influential music icons, we bring you the story of a man whose experimentation and creativity changed the course of the music industry as we know it today. You're listening to Gone Too Soon, the story of the dub inventor, King Tubby.
King Tubby moved the goalposts and totally changed the rules of the game.
I think that you're hearing his legacy in when you listen to reggae music, you're hearing a part of his legacy, whether he's involved in that particular song or not. People are influenced by him and they don't even know.
I'd say without Jamaican dub, you might have contemporary dance music, but I don't think it sounds like it does.
It's so much a part of how music is presented nowadays that you'll have your 4-8, 16-bar intro, build up, and then it's all about the drop. That comes from Tubby.
Dub came and rewrote the rules. It brought the engineer from behind the console to in front of the console.
Everybody want to be like Tubby's, you know. You have a lot of want to be like Tubby's, but it's only one Tubby's you have still.
Now, I dreams and daughters, I now present to you episode 3 of Cloak and Dagger. Music to make you stagger. So don't be like Johnny Dollar who swallowed the dagger. Right now.
King Tubby was born in Kingston, Jamaica on the 28th of January, 1941. He was christened Osborne Ruddock and started out as an electrical engineer. But his love of technology and music led to him becoming a central producer and remixer at the birth of dub.
They're running up your mouth and then they don't know what you're talking about. You see a little brother walking on the street and when you see him look neat, the yard start to run complete. But you got to love him if you don't want to, you know.
I first met King Tubby in January 1979, and for me, the journey to his studio in Waterhouse was a musical pilgrimage. King Tubby's influence can be heard in so much of the music that you hear on One Extra. Dub's essence can be found everywhere, from dancehall to drum and bass, dubstep to hip-hop. And tonight, we'll be speaking to those who work with him and some of the artists who've been influenced by him. So let's go back to the beginning, to 1950s Jamaica. Here to start the story of King Tubby is Bunny Stryker Lee, Tubby's friend and one of the great producers from the golden era of reggae music.
Tubby, his real name is Osborne Ruddock. We call him King Tubby. He started out as a technician, he used to build amplifiers and things like that. And he started out with Tubby's hometown hi-fi, right? And he grew from there into King Tubby's sound system. Now, he was one of the best sound in Jamaica.
King Tubby's first foray into the music business was with his own sound system. It was called Tubby's Hometown Hi-Fi. It started in the 1950s, playing in local events, but grew through the 60s into one of the biggest sound systems in Jamaica, becoming famous for its amazing sound quality, Tubby's use of sound effects, and its talented MCs. The high quality of his sound system was in part down to his daytime trade. Tubby was trained as an electrical engineer, and had a successful business fixing TVs, radios and other sound systems, amplifiers and speakers. Bunny Lee.
He was an electronic master, you know, and a self-taught engineer. He always practiced on the building of something, you know.
Record producer and collector Chris Lane cut dubs at Tubby's and remembers his electronics workshop.
It was just a small back room in the house. It was bits of amplifiers and transformers all over the worktop. It just looked like an electrical engineer's workshop, but with a couple of fantastic sound system amplifiers sitting around. So it was different.
Here's legendary Jamaican producer King Jammy, who was trained by King Tubby.
He used to wind transformer for amplifiers. He was the one who taught me to build amplifiers, and, you know, I just stick to that, and that was my future.
Tubby's understanding of electronics and sound came together when he started voicing artists and cutting dubs at his mother's old house, located at 18 Drumley Avenue. Nick Manassa, who also went to cut dub plates at King Tubby's, walks us through the building.
Like a lot of Jamaican studios, it's all about a compound. So when you went into King Tubby's, you'd see a big iron gate on the left, and on the right you'd see King Tubby's garage with his absolutely fantastic brown Ford Capri in there with the plates K Tubbs. So then you'd go through a little passage and sort of turn to your right, and you'd be in a sort of almost like a little maze of kind of concrete, and then common for Jamaican studios, you have the sort of outside benches where people can smoke, and that's where everybody hung out. And then you would go in, and on your right, on your immediate right, would be the little voicing booth where all those great tunes were voiced. Straight in front of you would be bits and bobs of old cutting lathes and stuff like that, all kind of techie stuff lying around. And then beyond that would be Tubby's office. And then to the right of the voicing booth was the studio, which is very small.
King Jammy.
King Tubby's studio wasn't really a big, proper studio. He had his dwelling house, and he just converted the bathroom into the voicing room. And he had a bedroom next to the bathroom, and that was the room that he had his equipment in, you know, like a master room. So it was just a little bathroom converted into a voicing booth. But it was very, very useful. It was a great experience.
Bunny Lee, who was one of the first to encourage Tubby to set up his studio.
When we first start voice at Tubby's now, we draw the drapes and voice in the room where Tubbs and everybody was, till we build the bathroom into a studio. The rest is history.
Chris Lane.
It was just wonderful to go into this very ordinary-looking house in a sort of rather run-down area of Kingston, and you go into the front room and there's a big mixing desk there and two big four-track recorders and a dub-cutting machine and big Tannoy speakers, and it just made such a contrast to the big the sort of professional commercial studios like Dynamics and Federal. It just looked so different. And of course, at that time, I was already aware of the work that Tubbs was doing there. So it was just sort of wonderful to see.
Tubby was to become the master of dub, but he wasn't the first to play instrumentals on sound systems. For this, we need to go back to a studio accident on the roof of Duke Reed's Treasure Isle. The playing of versions all started when, in 1968, the sound system operator Rudolph Ruddy Redwood went to cut a dub plate of the Paragons hit On the Beach.
Let's go and have some fun.
Producer Bunny Lee takes up the story.
We have to credit Ruddy's from Spanish Dawn. They were cutting a dub at Duke Reed Studio one evening, and he forgot to put the voice in it. And Ruddy, as a genius, said, make it go and play Smitty. Smitty is the engineer. And when Ruddy put on the tune, man, and him said, I'm going to play part two, everybody start singing and do everything, and the DJ start talk, jive talk about it. And come the Monday, I said, Tubbs, you see the joke business working up a joke, we're going to do it, you know. It mash up the whole of Spanish Town. And so we start do it. The only thing we start now, we start off with the voice and drop out the voice and bring in the rhythm. And people used to say, boy, Tubby's about amplifier when Bill Weham can't take the voice out of the record and, you know, so.
The popularity of instrumentals or versions gave the sound systems a new tool for the dance. It gave the MCs space to perform and the crowd could sing along to their favourite records. But the real jump came in 1972 when Tubby got his hands on a spare four-track recorder. Up until then, Tubby had had a relatively simple studio setup. Here's Chris Lane to explain.
He bought a two-track recorder and a very small desk and started messing about with it, doing rough vocals and then cutting dub. And then when Dynamics sold their equipment, Bunny Lee brokered the deal between Dynamics to sell Tubbs their mixing board and a couple of their four-track tape recorders. And that's really when things took off, because he had a proper professional mixing board and professional tape recorders there, so the quality was that much better.
Bunny Lee.
I was the producer at Dynamic Sound, so when Byron bring in the 8-track, he didn't have the space. So actually Byron said, I must take it and do what I want, so I took it up to Tubby's.
The added tracks on a 4-track gave the engineer infinitely more possibilities. With the extra tracks, they could isolate and accentuate different parts of the instrumentation. They could bring these parts in and out of the mix, and most importantly, they could put effects on them. Effects such as echo, reverb, delay, and for King Tubby's, his signature effect, his high-pass filter, were all pushed to their limits. Here's Bunny Lee to describe Tubby's mixing board.
The board that I get from Byron and give to Tubby was an MCI board. And it have some high-pass filter on it. I call it the squawky. Them kind of sounds you get from it, you know. Work wonders, so the guys them with the tweeter. Every sound system in Jamaica now start have them tweeter box on top. So, you know, it was lovely. Yeah, it take over the whole island.
Chris Lane.
Well, that was like Tubby's secret weapon. That gave him a sound that no one else had. You'd hear it being switched on the drum track, and it just sort of like brings the drums to life, and brings things, frequencies out in the drums that you hadn't really heard before. And of course, you hear something much like that sound in a lot of dance music now, where they just sort of sweep through all the frequencies and take the bass out and then drop it back in. The echoes of it are still there. But unfortunately, no one's ever built one. When I had my dub cutting studio, I must have asked 6 or 7 electronic engineers to build me one, and they all went, yeah, yeah, that's easy, yeah, that's simple. And none of them ever did it.
King Jammy.
That was a feature we had when we were mixing dub music. That was an exclusive feature, because I didn't see any more mixing console with those. People went out and, you know, tried to build to imitate King Tubby's high-pass filter. They did it, but it didn't come near close to it.
The Mad Professor.
That's all part of the newfound love of technology reggae had. The pushing of technology into another dimension. Because prior to that, it wasn't done. You make a record, make a master, mix it, away you mix it, rub it out, whatever. No need for that again. You know, reggae, should you, if you had your masters, you could be eating even more food than he ate originally.
Armed with these tools, King Tubby and his contemporaries started to push the boundaries of sound as they tried to create more and more individual versions of original recordings. Playing his mixing desk like an instrument, Tubby's studio became the go-to place to get a track reversioned. Here, captured at the beginning of the dub of Yabby U's False Dread, you can hear Yabby U talking to Tubby before they start recording.
Ready.
Hold on, little Tubbs.
Who look at Brad Tubbs?
What kind of thing that flames?
Brad Tubbs, take this one, Sarah.
You ready? God is watching you.
Here's Bunny Lee on working with Tubby in the studio.
No two versions sound alike. Because man was doing it, Manny Ali. drop out the bass now and say, Tubbs, drums in delay and drop out that and bring in bass and boop, boop, and pure madness. And when you listen, it was fantastic, you know.
The Mad Professor.
When you hear a track done at Channel 1, it sung different from a track done at Joe Gibbs. And when you hear a track mixed by Tubbies, sung different from a track mixed by Lee Perry, because your spirit embodies part of your production.
Chris Lane.
There are other people doing it, but Tubby's dubs just seem to stand out. I think because he started using a bit of reverb and a bit of echo and of course, the filter. So his dubs really stood out.
King Jammy.
Well, he was surely a technical person, and his techniques, you know, he alone have the techniques. You know what I mean? Not even me, who was so close to him, couldn't get his techniques. He did it secretly.
Although King Tubby kept it a secret at the time, the effects of delay, echo, reverb, and filter have now become fundamental in almost every studio. So whilst we were down at his Arriwa studios in South London, we asked the Mad Professor to take a couple of minutes to showcase Tubby's innovations on a four-track rhythm he'd set up on his traditional analog desk.
Okay, we're going to play first a drum track by itself, untreated. Untouched. Drum track. Okay, gonna add some effects. Add in some filter on the drums, high pass. Drum and bass. Rhythm section. Rhythm, rhythm, rhythm. Rhythm, 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 rhythm. Oh, rhythm.
Those simple effects of delay, echo, reverb, and the high-pass filter put to extreme effect, King Tubby stepped out from behind the mixing desk and became an artist in his own right. Mad Professor explains the change in attitude towards the engineer.
You have to remember, most people are like, when you're using reverb, you use it within certain limits. And when you're using a delay, you use it within certain limits. Dub came and rewrote the rules. It brought the engineer from behind the console to in front the console. Suddenly you'd be getting records out mixed by King Tubby's. Who? King Tubby's? Mixed by Errol Thompson. Mixed by Sylvan Morris. Who's that? Okay. Ah, the engineer. Okay. And suddenly engineers were not anonymous anymore, and they weren't guys who should be heard and not mentioned.
Princess by my side. Alice was there in Wonderland, staring far away.
Dub as a genre was born. The dub, the remix, became a reason to buy a record, and Tubby was one of the first to be credited on the label. Chris Lane.
When you were buying a Jamaican record, you know, a lot of the time you'd buy it for the B-side. I mean, you know, I've still got records now. I don't particularly like the A-sides. I don't, you know, the singing side is okay. But I bought it for the B-side. I just bought it because there's some wild dub on the B-side of it.
The Mad Professor.
We're the first B-side generation who, you know, when most people go to shop and buy a record, they buy it for what's on the A-side. We go and buy it for what's on the B-side. You say, flip it over. And when you hear the dub on the B-side, if the dub is good, then you say, yeah, man, take it. If the dub is boring, say, nah, man.
The first time I saw King Tubby's name on a record label was on the B-side of a love song by Larry Marshall called I Admire You. Side was titled Watergate Rock by King Tubby, and when I put it on, I couldn't believe the sound he created. It was amazing. Tubby loved jazz and had a large collection of rare records. I often used to wonder if deep down he was a frustrated musician and found a way to use the mixing desk as his instrument. King Tubby and his contemporaries set about reversioning almost every tune that came out of Jamaica. The B-sides on those singles were the start of the remix culture as we know it today. Here's Noel Hawkes.
We take it for granted now. It's an incredible thing, and one that has come into mainstream, really, that people now completely accept a remix. You know, everyone's waiting for the next pop remix because that's what they think will move their record onto another level. That's what Tubby's, Jamaica, the whole dub thing has given to the world, the idea that sound can be messed around with. By taking away from it, you don't take away from the essence of it. If anything, you make them stronger and build them up.
The control!
Listening to Gone Too Soon, the story of King Tubby. All these records that were coming out at the time were made to be played on the big sound systems, which were a staple part of downtown Kingston nightlife and the countryside. They were effectively the radio of Jamaica,
and every night of the week, you would find a sound system strung up on a corner and a crowd would gather. Chris Lane.
It's much as you would expect, you know, big speaker boxes, huge volume, great quality sound, you know, nice crisp tops, big, deep, mellow bass, entertaining DJ on the mic, great selection of records. But the key is that it's in the open air. That, you know, that's the thing that makes the difference.
Noel Hawkes.
The sound sounds so good because the bass is so deep, so resonant, the tops are so high, and you look up and you see the stars and you think, this is really how the music should be heard.
The Mad Professor.
I guess a good song system is a song system with its own identity. A song system who carves a niche out of the other songs.
Dancehall artist Stylo G.
Your perfect sound system after have the full, no, never 12 or 14 piece box. But you have to have bass, you have to have mid, and you have to have treble. To have a good sound, you have to have a good bass. The bass plays a major part, you know. The bass touch people. I used to be in my house at times, and sounds are playing miles away, and the bass is just jerking my house. And in Jamaica, we never have no rules. You know, sounds can be playing till 7 o'clock in the morning. Crazy, 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 crazy sound system.
King Tubby's hometown hi-fi became incredibly popular through the 70s. It had great sound quality, unique dub plates, and amazing host MCs. Most famously, the great U-Roy. Here we have a rare recording of the sound system in action from 1975 with U-Roy on the mic. In the UK, this sound system culture was replicated within the West Indian communities that had grown through the 70s and 80s. Sounds like Jar Shaka and Sir Coxon, and even a King Tubby's sound played in parks and community centres, and although the weather may have been different, some things stayed the same. Drum and bass producer and Valve sound system owner, Dillinger.
When I was growing up, probably about the age of probably about 9, I used to always see King Tubby's sound system play around the corner from me in the park, and the sound system would play there regularly. I just remember going back there as a child and just seeing like all these scoop bass bins and falling in love with them.
Dubstep producer, Pinch.
There is a very massive difference between hearing dub through a little hi-fi and hearing it in its true home environment, which is obviously a huge stack of speakers banging out. And the first time I guess I really kind of connected with this was at the St Paul's Carnival in Bristol, which is an annual event, and people just chuck sound systems in the front yards, and you start feeling the pavement shaking as you get close to the system. Next thing you know, you've got the hair on the back of your neck standing on end, you feel like you're being choked, you're being punched in the belly, but somehow all of the bass just seems to give you a kind of warm, comforting feeling, you know?
Jungle and drum and bass pioneer, DJ Hype.
You know, if I walk up to a reggae dance, I'm hearing the walls and the windows do this vibrating. That you know, yeah, you know it's going to be good. You could watch your trousers going blah, 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 blah. And then years later in the rave scene, if I walk up to a building and hear that rumble, I'm always looking at, you know, whoever's with me, and I'm like, you know it's going to be good.
That feeling of bass and the importance of a good quality sound was the inspiration for Dillinger and Lemon D to create their drum and bass Valve sound system.
I've always wanted to have a massive sound system since I was a child, or that. Looking at King Tubby's sound systems and all these different sound systems, and just thinking, wow, one day I'm going to build a bigger sound system than that, massive sound system with 80 bass bins. You know what I mean? And then when I've got the money to do it, producing, it had to be done. And it's just lovely to see the expression on kids' faces with a, you know, felt bass before. Like, when they hear it for the first time and feel it, you can see it in their face.
Yeah, you can hear the track.
Oh, I can feel that. It's amazing. Mm. And that just makes me laugh all the time when someone sees that. Like, it's worked tonight. It's worked.
This is another festival.
The sound system business in the 70s was very competitive, and the selectors always wanted to have exclusive records to play. These special tracks were mixed live and recorded straight onto an acetate, or dubplate as they became known. There were other studios that cut dub, but King Tubby's studio was set up just for this task. And paired with his unique timing and use of effects, hundreds, if not thousands of dubs were cut by him at 18 Drummerly Avenue. Chris Lane explains why, if you wanted to cut a dub, Tubby's was the only place to go.
He was famous for, you know, having dubs that no one else could play, and then he went on to be cutting dubs for other people. There was something about his timing and the way he used the effects that just added up to something that was sort of more than the sum of the parts, if you know what I mean. Because it's mixed sort of live straight onto the dub plate, even if someone else hears your dub and says, I want that tune, and I want it mixed exactly the same, there's no way that they're going to be able to replicate the mix. So someone else might have a dub of the same rhythm or the same song or whatever, but it's always going to be slightly different because you just can't mix two things alike like that.
Dub producer Nick Manassa.
The medium that made all that possible is the dub plate, the fact that they could go to a little studio and cut their own one-off record was vital. The whole thing wouldn't have happened without it.
And one of my most prized possessions is an acetate I cut at King Tubby's in January 1979. The dub mix of Michael Prophet's Love and Unity. As a way of playing exclusives was key in the evolution of dance music in the UK. Alongside dub and reggae DJs, drum and bass, garage and later dubstep DJs all cut dubs. Cutting rooms like Music House in North London kept alive the community spirit that had begun at Tubby Studio in Waterhouse, with selectors queuing sometimes for hours to cut their dub plates. Dillinger and Lemon D.
It was a long, drawn-out experience because there's so many DJs. You just walk into the room, basically, and there'd be, like, a handful of top DJs in there all throwing dats around. I want to cut next, you know, come on, what's happening? Yeah. I've been there for 2 hours. For the whole day just to get two... walk out with two dub plates.
Even though technology has moved on so that there isn't the need for people to still cut dub plates, here, Bristolian producer and Tectonic label owner Pinch explains why he does.
I still cut dub plates. I'm 100% vinyl and dub plates. For me, that's a part of a culture that's grown from the dub legacy, obviously. Part of it, for me, is the importance of having it on acetate. It's the sound and the sonic. It's kind of warmer and it's part of a process. But in essence, dub plates now to most people just mean exclusive tracks. So what's the point in having exclusive tracks? Well, as a DJ, you want to be able to draw for things that you know your average guy can't call for. So whether it's exclusive tracks or whether it's exclusive versions, and versions are a very powerful tool in the dance. People have an expectation when they hear something coming in that they recognise, and they get excited, and then when it twists, it goes in a slightly different direction. It's a different version. With the right tune played at the right time, it's explosive.
Damien Marley.
You still have a culture of dub cutting still. Well, there's a digital dub now, you know, digital dub cutting.
Tubby mixed thousands of records, and it's almost impossible to pick out one as his best production.
But there is a song that keeps coming up as an absolute classic. As with all dub tracks, there has to be a vocal. And in 1974, Jacob Miller recorded a song called Baby I Love You So for the producer and melodica player Augustus Pablo. So many of the tracks Pablo produced, Tubby mixed the B-side. It was called King Tubby Meets the Rockers Uptown and went on to become a dub classic. Journalist and lifelong reggae fan, Noel Hawkes.
We've done top 10s that have turned into top 20s and top 30s with 50 bubbling unders, because you can't put it down to 10 records, 20 records, let alone one record. I don't know, I think if it was going to be one record ever, King Tubby Meets Rockers Uptown on a single, just... Even knowing what was going on and hearing that record, it was otherworldly.
King Tubby's Meet the Rockers Uptown. Who do go do go do do go do go do. Ah, do go do go do do go do go do. And this record sold as a B-side, and the A-side wasn't even entering into the scheme of things, because the B-side, the dub version with Tubby's and Pablo, became such a classic, and everybody wanted that. Tubbs would be there, like, chank, 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 ga-do-ga, do-ga, do. A haunting. That was the peak of, you know, dubbing the centres, man.
Dillinger.
You just heard it everywhere. It's every dub rave, you know, from Shaka right away through, just everyone. It's a classic, isn't it? It's just that tremendous classic.
Journalist Dave Henley.
Every time I play King Tubby Meets the Rockers Uptown, it sounds as fresh and as exciting as when I first got the record back in 75.
Mad Professor.
I mean, it was a classic. Well recorded, well dubbed, Tubbs at his best, well played. You couldn't get better than Aston and Family Man Barrett. Mixed it in stereo, one of the few true stereo mixes. You know, if you listen to one of the original copies now, you'd hear like echoes sometimes coming, chang 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 on the left end, chang 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 on the right. Bliss.
The success of this song as a B-side led to Island Records releasing it again as the A-side. And then in 1976, an album of the same name came out with 12 Tubby dubs of Augustus Pablo Productions. That album went on to become one of the crossover dub albums of the 1970s. Chris Lane.
The King Tubbies Meets Rockers Uptown is probably the top of the heap. Not only is it fantastic dub mixing on there, the rhythms are great, It's Augustus Pablo. I remember that coming out, and I just, you know, that just blew everyone away, because there'd been lots of dub albums before that, but it sounded like it had actually been made deliberately as a dub album, rather than, oh, we've got all these tapes lying about, let's cobble them together and put out a dub album. You know, it sounds like it actually had a real purpose behind it.
Over the years, Tubby's production family grew as he took on apprentices that went on to become legends in their own right. People describe it like a family, with Tubby as the father figure and teacher. As the 80s progressed, he was forced to stop playing his sound system, and he took on more of an overseer role in the studio, handing over the reins to up-and-coming protégés. Names such as Philip Smart, Pat Kelly, Scientist, Fat Man and Professor all graduated from Tubby's to be engineers in their own right. Probably the most famous of all was Lloyd James, better known as Prince and later King Jammy.
Well, I first met him when I was about 10 years old, you know. And I was there and, you know, I got interested in music. And, you know, he used to play his liquor sound system down there. So I went to his yard and I used to listen to songs. And then I get to know him, you know. He just accepted me as a member of the family. So I used to hang around, then I just started learning the trade. Start doing things, you know. So he saw that I was a useful youngster. So he said to me, Danny, why don't you start learning technician? And, you know, he started to teach me something. And from there on, I just improvised on what I learned at Tubby's and became a technician.
As digital dub started breaking through in the 80s, King Tubby returned to the studio, bringing his magic to the new rhythms that were taking over the sound systems. He released a string of hits, working with artists such as Sugar Minot and Anthony Redrose, and, of course, he discovered the Firehouse Crew. His biggest rhythm came in 1985, Tempo. But on the night of February the 6th, 1989, whilst returning home from a recording session at his refurbished studios in Waterhouse, King Tubby was shot and killed in what appears to have been a senseless, bungled robbery. Noel Hawkes.
It was desperately sad. I was working full-time in the business at the time, and Tubby's in the last couple of years had actually come back really, really big into the business with the Firehouse and Waterhouse labels. He was making lots and lots of digital records. He was number one in the album chart with the Soundboy Burial LP. We used to, you know, just get boxes of it in every week. We'd get shipments up, and it would just walk out of the shop. So for something as senseless as that to happen at a time when he really was probably his most successful in terms of his recordings, and then gone.
King Jammy.
Well, that was the saddest moment of my life, because to know that your teacher, somebody just snuffed him out like that, and you don't know what reason for or anything like that. Well, I missed him a lot, because even now it can't erase from my mind the way I felt. It's every time I talk about him, there's a special feeling in my soul, because the love I had for it.
Bonnie Lee.
Everybody want to be like Tubby's, you know. You have a lot of want to be like Tubby's, but it's only one Tubby's you have still. He leave his mark on the world with the dub and innovation.
What Tubby and his contemporaries had started in their studios in the 70s had spread and grown roots throughout the world, not least in the UK, where dub was influencing all types of music. Nick Manassa.
For many years, there was dub music coming out of Jamaica as a sort of as an easy B-side or whatever. It was the second half of a 12-inch. You'd always have your dub mix, but it was more about providing something for the MCs in the dance to ride on rather than a work of art in its own right. And in fact, if you listen to some of the greatest King Tubby's dubs, they're totally engrossing. They're not that great for MCs to ride on. They're too busy. The people who kept dub music alive in Britain and gave it a really British flavour were definitely Mad Professor and Shaka.
The Mad Professor.
Through the 90s, obviously, you had various crossover acts, you know. I mean, I done some things with Orb. Then I done, like, an album that was a very big seller. No Protection, Massive Attack. That sold like, say, over a million copies, you know. Yeah, that kind of woke a lot of people up to dub, because suddenly we started to get calls from, like, New Zealand and Hong Kong and places like saying, oh, yeah, we heard this track, this album, and really like it, and blah, blah.
They say that dub music influenced a lot of the early hip-hop music in America, and a lot of the high-energy songs like Don't Make Me Wait by the Peach Boys, and records on West End label had dubs on the B-side, and people in England were doing the same thing at the same time. You'd often get an instrumental version of a soul record where bits dropped in and out. You know, you might not have delays and stuff, but everybody was interested in the drum and bass line. But more particularly, dub had a huge influence outside of the reggae scene in the late 80s, early 90s, with the whole Primal Scream indie dub sound.
One aspect that's common to many genres of music is the point when the bass kicks in, the drop. A phenomena that had been pioneered live on the sound systems in Jamaica and then repeated in dub mixes at Tubby's studio. Nick Manassa.
It's so much a part of how music is presented nowadays that you'll have your 4-8, 16-bar intro, build-up, 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 and then it's all about the drop that comes from Tubby's and goes down the ages and is there in every urban music that we listen to. The way, the importance of the drop, that's the influence of dub.
While Tubby and dub's influence were crossing over into the mainstream, it was also adding fuel to the underground rave scenes. Big sound systems with lots of bass, hosted by MCs, played at legal and illegal parties. House, rave, breakbeat and reggae were all played, and out of this melting pot, jungle started to emerge. Drum and bass pioneer DJ Hype.
It's a very important part of the evolution of modern day dance music. You know, when you go back in the history and work your way back, you will find right back at the beginning, usually, dub is there somewhere.
Lemon D and Dillinger.
It's just like a cousin of it, because it's basically taken all the basis of that culture and then brought it into a new culture with just different hybrid of that music. You know?
Yeah, that was one of the heavy influences that people were drawing from dub. So they were copying bass lines off dub tunes and sticking them
everything,
on top of it.
Yeah. And just throwing a beat on top of it. Well,
yeah, so that was the influence.
It's the blueprint, really. It's as if, like, we just hijacked it. Not in a negative way. It's that if you hand something over to the next generation, it's kind of like, this is what we did with it. And without it, really, I don't think that genre of music would have flourished the way it did.
B-line would not be the lead in a song before dub, would it? You might like the bass line, there might be a cat, but that weren't what's selling the track. It's either the vocals, you know, the lead guitars. Reggae dub brought bass to the front. The fact that being in a venue when the system's loud and hearing them wall shake comes from dub. So when you cross over into dance music years later, those influences are there, you know, drum and bass. You know, what's dubstep? It's bass. It's those same formulas. When garage was big, it's the drum and the bass. You know, you know, where does that term come from? An old reggae tune. You know, it's all there.
And now, 40 years on from the birth of dub, the influences can still be heard across dance music. Whether it be reverb vocals in house, echoed horn stabs in hip-hop, or filtered dubstep bass lines, Tubby's magic lives on. Toddler T.
What dub has done in popular culture over the last 40, 50 years is stamped a sonic, a sound, and the root of so much effects and the way music breathes and how we rave in the UK all spirals down to dub music. It's like one guy kind of was a trickle into so many genres and beyond, all the way from obviously reggae dancer, house music, garage music, jungle music, hardcore music, pop music, dubstep music, grime music. We could be here all day. The legacy runs thick.
Tectonic label owner and DJ, Pinch.
If you're into dubstep, if you're into drum and bass, jungle, garage, dancehall, any of these kind of things can all relate back to the early days of dub and the effect it had on the way people perceived music after it had happened. And no one can top Tubby. Tubby was revered, and for good reason. I mean, his sonic is absolutely impeccable, you know. There's nothing out of place. It's just powerful sound, carefully measured. And I think something that a person like Tubby had, which you can't buy, is a set of ears and an understanding of what things feel right and when they're in the right place. The music that come out of Tubby's studio over the years is just phenomenal and has a huge influence on everything that's followed since, certainly in terms of dance culture and the hardcore continuum and, you know, all the things that have spawned from that.
Record producer and collector, Chris Lane.
I'd say without Jamaican dub, you might have contemporary dance music, but I don't think it sounds like it does.
There's been a real renaissance in the last few years as dub has found its place back in the clubs alongside the music it has inspired. Mad Professor's Son producer Ariwa Joe explains.
I really do think that kids are really starting to recognise that as well, because when we play shows these days, a lot of promoters are putting on the old school acts like Professor or Sherwood or Rodigan, and then they'll have some upcoming DJs like Mala, Dubstep or whatever, and they'll put on different kind of generations of dub music. So I think people my age or even younger, they're starting to recognise and they're starting to see the relation from dub to jungle or drum and bass or whatever.
DJ Pinch.
There was a period when my dubstep night subloaded. We kind of paired up and we'd have two rooms. He would have a sound system clash downstairs in the club, and I'd have the you know, the dubstep thing going on upstairs. So yeah, for me, I always made that connection. I mean, you know, dubstep, I think, had a very similar effect, certainly in the earlier years, where a lot of it was very minimal and very bass orientated, and you know, you weren't really ever going to experience it unless you heard it in front of a proper sound system. So you know, the night for me, it was a perfect connection, bringing old school dub heads into what at the time was a new thing from dubstep side of things. And the interesting thing was that you'd see a lot of, you know, a lot of kids who were coming in for the dubstep go downstairs, check the dub, and they were instantly converted. You know, they absolutely loved it. It was a very easy connection to make.
So where is dub in the world today, and what is its future? The Mad Professor.
Dub is a lot more international a word than it was, say, 30, 40 years ago, you know? You get dub in Mexico, dub in Costa Rica, dub in Brazil, dub in Argentina, dub in Africa. You get dub everywhere.
Reach out for life, girl.
Stylo G.
Dub music means a lot to me, especially in the UK, because dub music opens a lot of, you know, doors for reggae in terms of it. It's like its cousin, but then, you know, people evolve dub music more with drum and bass, dub steps, all of this new sound. So dub music plays a major part into my career at the moment.
Jamaicans. Many we are one, peace and love. I went down to West Kingston. There was peace, peace and love. Oh yeah. I went down to East Kingston. There was peace, peace and love.
I personally, I've made all sorts of dubs. I've made like dubs with Lee Perry, I've made dubs with local bands, I've just done a samba dub, I've done a cumbia dub with people from Colombia, the future of dub is really collaboration, I think, with like different music sources, different music genres, and just taking it to a next level, you know? The thing about dub is that it's got infinite possibilities. You're only limited by your imagination. There's no limit to what you could do.
Damian Marley.
Yeah, man, I mean, dub rhythms play a huge part in our culture and our genre of music. And you can even see how it really influences a whole lot of other people, too. I mean, you hear Kanye West and these guys sampling dub records now. You have dubstep movement, all this kind of thing, more electronic kind of style of thing. All of these things really is influenced off of the original dub music, you know what I mean? As reggae in dub version style, you know what I'm saying?
Break it up, break it up. Oh, no, no, no. Don't break it up. You,
the effects of King Tubby's experimentation are still being felt today. The music that started on the island of Jamaica has spread throughout the world and has influenced so much of the music we love. The creativity of a handful of engineers, the intensely competitive sound system culture, and an industry that sold records miles beyond the shores of Jamaica produced a body of work that still stands the test of time and continues to inspire new generations of music fans. I'd like to close this show with a personal favorite, a record that I think sums up everything that's wonderful about King Tubby's production style. This is the dub of Tubby's Dub Song. DJ Pinch.
So many people I know have got into dub backwards. So they were jungle heads and they were asking, what's that sample from? What's that sample from? And, you know, found out about dub music this way. And actually, you know, you can go across pretty much any genre of dance music. And I bet you a dub tune, a roots tune, it's been sampled, it's been used in a way, and it's caught someone's ear and they've thought, hey, I like this tune, but I don't know why. What is it? And then if you're feeling adventurous, you trace it back and you'll find out why.
Noel Hawkes.
The world of music owes it a huge debt. We listen to things differently now because of what those people did. And I think that what's happened now is that all the music we've really heard post-1980, dance music, electronic music, any kind of music, its basis is in dub, but with an awful lot of those elements taken out of it. But the theory behind it, and the bedrock that it's built on, is what happened in Jamaica between 1973 and 1979. You know, and I'd argue that till I was blue in the face.
And finally, Bonnie Stryker Lee.
As long as you have Jamaica music, you have to talk about Tubby's. When come to version or dub, he started it. Him leave a legacy of work behind Tubbs. I still have tune with Tubbs that don't come out still, you know.
Osborne King Tubby Ruddock was at the heart of dub. His studio at 18 Drummondy Avenue was the epicentre of the music, and the name King Tubby will forever be associated with the style of music that's still evolving and inspiring today. I'm David Rodigan, and you've been listening to Gone Too Soon, the story of the dub inventor, King Tubby.
Ready.